It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Anthony Williams has been living in the UK since he was about 7 years old. He came over with his parents in the 70s from Jamaica, a former British colony. He went straight from school to the British Army, serving for 13 years, and now lives in Birmingham. But in 2013, he lost his job as a janitor because he couldn't prove he was a citizen. To make matters worse, he didn't qualify for unemployment benefits either.
And that's when it all hit the fan. That I wasn't entitled to any benefits because I wasn't on any system. That was just pure confusion, and that threw me.
Anthony wasn't the only person experiencing this rude awakening. There's a name for the thousands of Black people in Britain who, like Anthony, suddenly, and for the first time, found their citizenship status in question. They're part of a group called the Windrush Generation. The Empire Windrush was a ship that in 1948 brought hundreds of people, mostly Black, from British colonies in the Caribbean to help rebuild the United Kingdom after World War II. From that point on, the UK saw a wave of arrivals from the islands that would last over the next 25 years. The earliest arrivals came over as citizens of the British Empire, and those who came later were granted all the rights provided to anyone born in the UK. But in 2012, a surge of immigration from Europe and criticism that the government was losing its grip on its borders resulted in a broad crackdown on what the government called illegal migrants. That made things complicated for people like Anthony, who had never been considered illegal migrants before, but who also didn't have the paperwork to prove their right to be in the country. Many lost access to jobs, education, healthcare. Some were even deported.
It was the Prime Minister of Barbados or someone had actually mentioned something to Theresa May regarding saying, we have a problem. There seem to be a lot of people getting deported back to our countries who've been in UK 40, 50 years. What's the problem?
Then in 2018, after public outcry over the mistreatment of the Windrush generation, something remarkable happened.
The Windrush generation helped to build the country that we are today. And I want to dispel any impression that my government is in some sense clamping down on Commonwealth citizens, particularly those in the Caribbean who built a life here. The Home Secretary apologised to the House of Commons yesterday for any anxiety caused, and I want to apologise to you today.
Prime Minister Theresa May herself and the UK government apologised and set aside what they called compensation for the harm caused. Only a handful of governments have ever done this. It's a big deal. But making amends for past injustices is not such an easy feat. That's something Alexandra Angra, who headed the Windrush compensation policy, would soon find out.
I thought that this was a real opportunity, having myself worked in the area of truth and reconciliation. But little did I know that really wasn't the plan.
It is the scandal which shamed Britain. Thousands from the so-called Windrush generation who came here legally were then told they were here illegally.
The data shows that the median white family has 10 times more wealth than the average Black family.
Economists often point to the absence of African-American generational wealth.
It is inhumane and cruel for so many of that Windrush generation to have suffered so long.
It's much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee an annual income, for instance, to get rid of poverty.
hundreds of black Britons were failed, who, after decades, were British, but not British enough.
Welcome back to The Paycheck. I'm Jackie Simmons.
And I'm Rebecca Greenfield.
In our last episode, we talked about the movement to pay reparations in the United States. The money would go to descendants of people who were enslaved to acknowledge the harm done. And a knock-on effect is that it helps close the racial wealth gap. Last week, the House advanced a bill that would study reparations for descendants of slaves. But any payments to black people still face a major uphill battle.
There are other countries that have given cash payments to populations for persecution, including our friends just across the Atlantic. The UK is in the midst of what it calls a compensation scheme to pay back members of the Windrush generation.
The story of Windrush might sound like an immigration story, but it's also a story about black economic inequality in the UK. Around 14% of the UK population is non-white, and in London, 40% of residents are ethnic minorities. Many of those people immigrated from former British colonies, some of them descendants of slaves. And when they came to the UK, they faced discrimination in where they could live and what jobs they could have. They also faced outright violence based on their race.
Much like in the US, some of that historic discrimination manifests in a vast racial wealth gap today. A recent report found white British households have 9 times the median total wealth of a family headed by someone from a black African background. And more than twice the proportion of black people live in low-income households than white people. But the Windrush compensation scheme wasn't set up to address any of that. The government has approached it more like fixing a bureaucratic error, which is partly why it's less of a model and more of a cautionary tale. Olivia Konateohulu, a reporter in Bloomberg's London Bureau, has more.
Let's go back to Anthony Williams. He's the man you heard about at the start of the show. Things were fine for him until shortly after he started a job as a head janitor in 2013. He was then told he was no longer employable and he didn't have the right to work in the UK. A year earlier, Theresa May, who at that time was Home Secretary, and leading the government's new immigration strategy, brought in what would become known as the hostile environment. She introduced a series of new measures, which included requiring landlords, the National Health Service, charities and other organisations to carry out ID checks. The government also started a communication drive across London telling people who they called illegal immigrants to go home or face being arrested and detained. The aim was to make the UK a really harsh place to live for undocumented migrants.
We want to ensure that only legal migrants have access to the labour market, free health services, housing, bank accounts and driving licences. And this is not just about making the UK a more hostile place for illegal migrants. It is also about fairness.
The national, if you like, narrative was around, we've got to show that if you don't have the right to be here, we're going to make it really hostile, so you leave. Unfortunately, people who had the absolute right to be here, who had come from the Commonwealth, often with their parents, they were then being told, if you can't prove you've got the right to be here, we're going to take away your access to your job, to healthcare, to education. And this was shocking because, you know, there'd always been this idea that if you'd come from the Commonwealth, you just had the right to be here. You didn't need to prove the right to be here.
That's Alexandra Ankara from the Windrush Compensation Scheme. She's worked as a barrister and an expert on restorative justice. Alexandra's not from the Windrush generation herself, but her father's from Ghana, and she knew someone whose parent was a fellow Ghanaian who was caught up in the scandal. Anthony, who never needed any paperwork before, found out he was lacking crucial proof of his right to work, which made it impossible for him to get a job. And what he saw in newspapers about the government's new immigration strategy scared him.
How people get picked up on the streets, the van driving around with a massive sign saying, if you're here illegally, pack 3 bags, we're coming to get you. That kind of stuff, and it really frightened people. So, you know, some people go on the ground. money was short. I mean, come the winter time, I used to do stupid things like, I used to turn my fridge off. It's that cold in my flat.
Anthony's limbo lasted 5 years. During that time, he couldn't access healthcare. He was unable to get treatment when he had a serious gum infection and lost most of his teeth.
I was confused. I didn't know what was going on. I believe I was the only person exactly to. I didn't have no one to talk to about it, really, because it's something I don't want to talk about because of my past being in the army and now I'm being treated in this way. And it's actually hurt my pride a bit. It really has.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
To really understand why this is a story about racial dynamics in the UK, we have to go back a few centuries, well before 1948, when the Empire Windrush sailed into the Tilbury Docks in the east of England, carrying hundreds of people to help the country rebuild. I talked to my colleague from CityLab, Brenton Mock, who's written about the history of Afro-Caribbeans in the UK and about how the Windrush generation fits in. Hey, Brenton.
Hey, Olivia. So, I wrote about this last year for Bloomberg CityLab, and it's important to understand that the United Kingdom colonized many of the Caribbean islands in the 1600s. And in the centuries that followed, they'd go on to form a key part of the empire's trade network. The colonies took millions of black people from Africa to work on sugar plantations, and London's financial district became the center of an economic system built on Caribbean slavery. When slavery ended across the British Empire in the 1830s, white elites and governors stopped investing in infrastructure, education, and business development on these islands. So to achieve some semblance of economic mobility, the newly freed Afro-Caribbeans traveled to other parts of the British Empire and also the Americas to earn money, much of which they sent back to their families. World War II is a massive turning point for Britain and its relationship with its Caribbean colonies. Thousands of people from the islands joined the armed forces as British subjects, and when the fighting was over, many of them traveled to Britain to help rebuild the nation they felt a sense of loyalty to. And this is where we're beginning our story of the Windrush generation. Many of their ancestors were enslaved and their children were considered subjects of the British Empire and its colonies, so many of them weren't really immigrants. At least not those first arrivals. Yet, the new Afro-Caribbean arrivals experienced both overt and casual racism. They were harassed, and because white people refused to work alongside them, they were denied jobs. The day the Empire Windrush arrived in England, a group of lawmakers wrote to the Prime Minister warning about the consequences of what they called, quote, an influx of colored people.
Today, some people are proud of the UK's imperial history, when at one point it held power over around a quarter of the world's population. Others see the period as one of huge economic exploitation and human suffering, which was the starting point for gaping inequality, not just within the UK, but across the globe. And then there's those who see the truth as somewhere in between the two. One thing is clear. Over the years, black communities in Britain have registered their anger with what they see as continued unequal treatment. And when a US police officer murdered George Floyd last year, there was an outpouring of grief for the discrimination that black people have experienced in the UK. That exploded into a series of protests like the ones we saw in the US. Much of that frustration was targeted at how the Windrush generation has been treated. There's been a lot of soul searching since then. Financial heavyweights in the City of London have begun to apologise for the roles they played in financing and profiting from the slave trade. The Windrush compensation scheme was established before the George Floyd protests. It was never about trying to address these wider issues and apologising for racism and slavery. It's about making amends for a series of errors. The most significant of those mistakes took place in the 1970s, about a decade after the majority of British colonies became independent. There was a growing feeling within the government, but also across the country, that too many people were coming to live in Britain. So they introduced legislation to make it harder for people to get to the UK. One of those laws decided that everyone who arrived in the country from the former empire before 1973 could stay. But authorities kept no official record of everyone that they gave that permission to. There was no paperwork or any kind of identification in what has since been called a profound institutional failure by an independent review. Then, in 2010, the Home Office, the ministry in charge of domestic affairs, destroyed the immigrants' landing cards. It says that decision was for data protection reasons, and they didn't think the information on the cards was that important. So the Black Caribbean British residents were left with absolutely no way of proving their right to live in the country. And they had never needed that, until the hostile environment policies were introduced. We'll probably never know how many members of the Windrush generation got caught up in this policy, but it's safe to say, thousands. The compensation scheme that the UK government came up with aimed to right the wrongs of the scandal, paying what they described as, quote, eligible individuals who did not have the right documentation to prove their status in the UK and suffered adverse effects on their life as a result. To achieve this, they'd break down all the ways someone could have been affected, from losing their job to the general impact on their life, and use public funds to pay for it.
I felt really optimistic at the beginning, feeling this was an opportunity to go and help.
That's Alexandra Ankara again. She wanted to be involved because she knew someone wrongly caught up in the hostile environment and understood the price they paid. But as soon as the scheme was set up, it was plagued with difficulties. Payments were delayed and capped at a level that didn't even come close to compensating people who'd been unable to work for years. In fact, it was about a full year after Anthony applied for compensation that he got an offer.
It was £18,776. That's the 5 years of misery, 5 years of lost employment, 5 years of loss of access to any kind of medical treatment. I started laughing at first because I thought they were winding me up.
Just under £19,000. It didn't come close to compensating Anthony for the years he hadn't worked. And he wasn't alone. The project faced an absolute avalanche of criticism. Part of the payments focused on loss of employment, but they were capped at the loss of a year's salary. Many people, like Anthony, had been out of work for five times as long. For others, the compensation was so delayed that they died before receiving anything. And some people question why the Home Office was even running the scheme at all, when the whole mess was their fault in the first place.
There are a number of problems with the compensation scheme, and the obvious one is that the scheme itself lacks independence. The hostile environment policy was a policy that was implemented by the UK government, so there is a bit of a case of the government marking its own homework.
That's Ravi Nair. He's a top London City lawyer who's worked on compensation schemes across Britain, including a case for one of the country's biggest football clubs involving a sexual abuse scandal. He's also studied other cases from around the world. He says that all the best attempts to right past wrongs have been efficient, transparent, fair, timely, and used experts. The Windrush compensation scheme hasn't always hit those markers.
In October 2020, 226 individuals had been paid a total of £2,185,000, give or take. I mean, it doesn't take a great mathematician to work out that that means that each person received, on average, less than £10,000.
Meanwhile, Alexandra, working with the team put together to get the compensation project up and running, started seeing cracks appear in the whole process.
There was kind of chaos. It was a team that had been assembled at short notice. And it meant that we had a mixture of people. We had people with good hearts, and they were skilled and expert. But we also had people who were actually part of the system, and they were very much part of the problem.
We'll be right back.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
A public debate emerged about the nature of the entire scandal and why it happened in the first place. Had the Windrush generation been mistreated because they were black? Or was it really just a mistake? The reality is complicated. It was easier for some people to see it as a bureaucratic error and not as a way to deal with the legacies of racism in this country.
There were some who refused to see this as an issue that engaged with race or race discrimination. And invariably, though those people who had been harmed were black, they refused to see this as anything other than as an error, a mistake that didn't engage race and wanted to look at it with a colourblindness.
About a year after Alexandra joined the team, she found her situation untenable.
Every aspect of it was wanting, from lack of communications, the very poor effort around outreach, the continual failure to respond to community concern and criticism. And it really also reflects that the Home Office doesn't really employ that many senior black people. So, you know, you have an organisation with 30,000 plus staff, but in senior leadership roles, you'll have less than 10 black staff. The attitudes of some staff were vindictive and disgraceful. And so all of those things told me it was time to go.
Alexandra resigned and ended up leaving the Home Office altogether in August last year. The scheme would go on to receive so much criticism that in December 2020, just over a year after it launched, the Home Office announced it was overhauling the payments, which included raising the maximum payment anyone could receive for the impact on their life by 10 times, and those changes were applied retrospectively. When we got in touch with the government, a spokesperson told us, "We launched the Windrush compensation scheme to ensure those so badly let down get the compensation they deserve." They also said since April 2019, they've offered almost £80 million. But is it even possible to fairly compensate someone for these past injustices? Anthony's since been offered a substantially higher figure than the £18,500 than he was going to get before. But that doesn't change what's happened to him.
I lost my confidence, really. I'm not outgoing anymore. I don't really trust people that much anymore. And they're also at some point now where I do regret joining the army in some ways, you know, because I gave them 13 years, and those 13 years were the best years of my life. And look what they're doing to me now.
There are many others still fighting the payments they were offered, or who haven't received anything. And all these years later, there are still people today waiting for their documents to be sorted out. When you ask Alexandra about her role in the programme and her decision to leave, she looks back with mixed feelings.
My father fought in the war for this country. I've got a brother who's seen active service, but there were veterans who had got caught up in Windrush as well. So how do I then look my children in the face and tell them, be proud of your country, your country's got you, if we have Windrush? So until we resolve Windrush, until we resolve our nation's hurt, you know, we don't move forward together as a nation. So how did it make me feel? It made me feel wretched that I had failed, because the cost of failure in successive generations could be very great. And I don't want that on my conscience.
Last month, the UK released a report it commissioned on racial inequality. It tried to answer tough questions about why inequality between white people and ethnic minorities persist. It found that the UK has entered a new era of participation for ethnic minorities, who should, and I quote, examine the extent individuals and their communities could help themselves through their own agency, rather than wait for invisible external forces to assemble to do the job. This week, a group of United Nations experts rejected and condemned that report, stating, and again, this is verbatim, "It is stunning to read a report on race and ethnicity that repackages racist tropes and stereotypes into fact, twisting data and misapplying statistics."
Next week on the season finale of The Paycheck, we explore what it might look like to really dig into America's racist past and atone for it.
Mississippi sent two people to the U.S. Capitol. One is Jefferson Davis, who used to be the president of the Confederacy when it seceded from the Union. And then the second is James C. George, who was a U.S. senator, a colonel in the Confederate Army during the Civil War, and also my great-great-great-grandfather. Also, he owned many slaves.
Thanks for listening to The Paycheck. If you like this show, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was hosted by me, Rebecca Greenfield.
And me, Jackie Simmons. Today's episode was edited by Caroline Alexander and Rebecca Greenfield. It was reported by Olivia Konate Ahulu and Brenton Mock.
This episode was produced by Lindsay Cradowill. We also had production help from Magnus Henriksen and editing help from Francesca Levy, Rakshita Saluja, Janet Paskin, and Jackie Simmons. Our original music is by Leo Sidran. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. We'll see you next time.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.